Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Dwight Schultz, sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. It is an inconvenience to you, I understand it. The only inconvenience to me is that I have to throw away my other two T-shirts, which say, I sat in for Savage once, I sat in for Savage twice, and if I finish this show, I will have sat in for Savage thrice. Who the hell am I? Most of you should not or do not know, I am certain. This is a professional actor for over 40 years. I am best known as Howling Mad Murdoch on television's The A-Team. I say television because there is a feature film in which Sharlto Copley portrayed the character. I also played in a television series called Star Trek. For those of you who are familiar with television and the idiosyncrasies of that, the character that I played, Reginald Barclay, spanned two series, Voyager and Next Generation. He was a lieutenant for 13 years. He finally got promoted at the end, and as well he should. He was a brilliant guy, and I enjoyed doing it very much. But all of my life, I have been a conservative and an aficionado of talk radio. When others were watching television, I was lying in bed with my RCA Victor seven transistor radio. It was blue with gold trim, and I had a little earphone that went in my ear, and I would turn the dial to try to catch talk show hosts out of New York City. Followed everybody. I'm familiar with almost everyone, and am very familiar with Dr. Michael Savage. In fact, yesterday I was listening to his program, and if you weren't, try to get a hold of the show. There was an incredible call. Peter was his name, and it was – there are very few – I mean, the great thing about Dr. Savage is that you don't say, what did he mean? What's he saying? You know, he's just never clear. You don't say that when you listen to this man. You tune in for a reason. Just as if you look – if you read his Playboy interview, you are not disappointed because – the man doesn't change. He is who he is, and he gives you what you want, which is the unbridled, hard truth. Terrifying at times. And this poor liberal called in, and somewhere around the middle of the call, this guy started to question Savage's historical take. And then he started to question whether or not Dr. Savage was rejected from Berkeley. Well, every time Savage nailed him, and he also he tried to take exception to the conceptual idea that Winston Churchill perhaps saved Western civilization, and he tried to give all the credit to Roosevelt. But every time, every single time Savage would nail him, the guy would change direction. And well, yes, but how about this? Well, what about that? It is the prototypical liberal thought process. I will challenge you. When you crush me, I will challenge you with another question. I will never refer to the fact that I have been crushed, that my ideas fell flat, that you flattened them. I will move on to something else, because after all, I epitomize the liberal mind, and I'm on your show. And I don't really listen to your program because I'm educated. I get anything from it. I listen to it because I'm simply entertained, which is a crock. The moment a liberal begins to lose an argument, they try to turn it into entertainment. It is the quintessential call. I had to ask the producers, the great producers, all the wonderful people in this program to send me the call because I was on the road listening to the show. But it is, if you can listen to it, it is the reason that this show is important. Because process, thought process is important. It isn't just quanta. Factual information thrown out against the wall can be important, but for the most part, it's superfluous. It's meaningless. It is the way the quanta are put together, the flow of the quanta, the mind of the matter. How the information is used, is it supported by evidence? Are the conclusions right? Listen to this call. It's a little bit of a roller coaster because there were a few times I thought there was going to be an explosion, but it didn't happen. The telephone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Process. Thought process. Very, very important. You are being told on a daily basis that what you see and what you hear is not true. As for now with the Tea Party, moving on. And it's being attacked from all sides. It was attacked by Democrats, if you remember, it was called a AstroTurf uprising. AstroTurf, not a real turf. Not like us Democrats. No, it's not like us Democrats who are real. We are real. These people are, who are they? We don't even know them. No, the Tea Party was attacked by Democrats early on and it was dismissed. And of course, the Tea Party did very well. And so what did Democrats do? What did they do? They do what they do best. They tried to change the language. You know, these Democrats, these Tea Party people, they're becoming a little too successful. So let's call them something else. We'll call them Bobbitt. And we'll get everybody to use that term, and that's what they'll become, teabaggers. That didn't work either. But, you know, the reason that I bring that up and this process up is that it never changes. It is always the same. When things aren't working, Democrats, liberals, and progressives assume that it isn't what they're saying that isn't working. You know, we need to repackage that thought. We need to repackage that. If I repackage what I'm trying to sell, the redistribution of income, taking money from people and giving it to other people, if I just change the words around, I know we'll call taxation investment. And the Bush tax cuts will become the Obama tax cuts. Even though there are no tax cuts, we're not going to cut taxes. We're just going to let the tax rates stay where they are. We're going to call them tax cuts. And then we're going to tax the filthy rich, the people who are making over $250,000 a year, even though we know that they're not rich. Even though we know one person working 80 hours a week can make $250,000, and another person working 40 hours a week can make $250,000, and there's nothing equal or fair about taking more from one or the other. And we also know that if you live in Los Angeles, $250,000, you're not rich because, you know, really it's only about $160,000 when it's done, and the average price of a house is $270,000. So we just call it rich, and when we say rich, everybody will buy it because we know NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN, they all are in the bag. And so here we are. Process. We have an election. An election in a little tiny state of Delaware. Little teeny weeny state. That Biden, President Biden, Vice President Biden was in. He's vice president now, but he was there for many, 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 many years. And Mike Castle. Mike Castle. I heard three reporters, anchors on television, and I also heard Karl Rove use this word. He is beloved. Beloved. Mike Castle, beloved. Beloved. When I hear reporters use the word beloved, I become very desperate to find out what it's all about. Well, it seems that Mr. Castle, who was supposed to be a Republican, who lost the election, behaved in a very, very special way. And it was very reminiscent of the way another supposed Republican with the name of Didi Fazekaba, up there in New York State, the way she behaved. They behaved in exactly the same way. And you know, animals behave in very certain ways. You can tell that a tiger is different from an elephant, not just by the scat, but by their behavior. You can tell a beaver from a mountain lion by their behavior. And the territory that they claim, and how they live. When we get back, I'm going to give you some secret tapes which will reveal the nature of these supposed Republicans. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Yes, we had a primary election the other night, as we had one, some months back in New York. And Mike Castle was the favorite among Republicans and Democrats because he was beloved. But lo and behold, a woman by the name of O'Donnell won the election. Not liked, this woman. Not liked by Karl Rove, Charles Krauthammer, or Mike Castle. But the people of Delaware, the Republicans of Delaware, the Republican Party, the people who are the Republican Party, voted for her. And the man who was a Republican, who said he would support the Republican candidate because, after all, he thought it was going to be him, said he wasn't going to support her. He didn't even call her. He didn't call her to concede and to congratulate her. Instead, well, this is what Mike Castle said. All right, thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike. Yes, sounded strangely animalistic. Not human. Instead of calling O'Donnell and conceding and congratulating her and being a good Republican, people who had supported him for so many years, in fact, he decided to bray a little bit. But he did get on the telephone, it is understood and reported by some, with the former senator from Delaware and the president of the United States. And the conversation went something like this. Thank you, thank you, yes. Strangely reminiscent of a novel by George Orwell called Animal Farm. Napoleon got on the phone to talk to one of his farm animals. Now, no one believes more firmly than Napoleon, Comrade Napoleon, that all animals are equal. And he, Napoleon, would only be too happy to let all of the animals make decisions for themselves. But sometimes, you know, you make wrong decisions. Comrades, he threw it in. Then where would you be? Isn't it funny? Isn't it funny that Skazafava up there in New York supports the Democrat after she loses? And Castle supports the Democrat after he loses. Isn't it funny? How could you do that if you believed in the principles of the conservative Republican Party? How could you do it? You couldn't. You could not. You could not do it. You see, in Animal Farm, here's another paragraph. It's beautiful. Man is the only creature that consumes without producing. He does not give milk. He does not lay eggs. He is too weak to pull the plow. He cannot run fast enough to catch the rabbits. Yet he is lord of all the animals. He sets them to work. He gives them back all that they need. But it's a bare minimum. It will prevent them from starving. And the rest he will keep for himself. You see, Democrats believe that animals are more important than you are. They're proving it right now in the Central Valley of California. With every environmentalist rule, with every nonsensical conceptual idea that's on the drawing boards in the form of stupid, incomprehensible regulations, they are throwing up on human beings. Like that fellow who attacked down there at the Discovery Channel. Children are pestilence. Pestilence! This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on The Savage Nation.
There's also a debate over whether animals should have autonomy, that is, freedom of choice. I believe here there's legitimate room for debate because autonomy in the form of free choice might disturb animals' interests in some contexts. Nonetheless, that's an arena in which much more development can be done both by law and by political practice.
That was Cass Sunstein, your regulatory czar. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. Animals should be given freedom of choice. Animals should be given freedom of choice, but you shouldn't have the freedom to use your money. Can you believe that the regulatory czar of the United States, a man who is now plotting minutia, who has bragged about it, to foil your life, is a member of this administration? Can you believe it? Is he part of a real animal farm? I believe he is. I believe that there is no question about it. The last thing I'm going to read about from Orwell's Animal Farm. It had become usual to give Napoleon the credit. Napoleon was the pig. The credit for every successful achievement. Sound familiar to you? I did this, I did that, we did this, when I came in, I did. I, my administration, I did what I want to do. Does that sound familiar? I'm not an ideologue. It became usual to give Napoleon the credit for every successful achievement and every stroke of good fortune. You would often hear one hen remark to another, under the guidance of our leader, Comrade Napoleon, I have laid 5 eggs in 6 days, or 2 cows. Enjoying a drink at a pool, they would exclaim, thanks to the leadership of the Comrade Napoleon, how excellent this water tastes. Is this at all, does it sound familiar to you that this is the day that the waters will recede? Do you remember what this man did? The ego of it. Yes, the ego. Was it ego or was it preparation? Was it ego? Or was it an attempt to change the language? Was it ego? Or was he acclimating you to a new way of fundamentally changing the United States of America? From the president's own lips, from his own lips, play clip 12, please.
Tell me who you walk with, and I will tell you who you are.
And so he walks with Cass Sunstein, a man who says he wants to do away with meat eating in this country and do away with the guns and hunting. If we're going to kill animals and eat them, it's all right, but we have to wait for them to grow old. Hey, how old is that squirrel, John? Can we eat it yet? Folks, this is not a joke. This is not humorous. Think of the other individuals that this man has appointed to his administration. Now, one, of course, Van Jones, a communist. Now, we lost 80,000 people fighting wars to communists, but he found it. It was all right to appoint him. He had to quit because some people saw it as a little unusual, maybe too unusual, something that shouldn't have happened. A guy who was a revolutionary, a fellow who said that the United States populace gets its marching orders from the United States military. Tell me who you walk with, and I will tell you who you are. He studied, and one of his heroes is Saul Alinsky, a fellow who, when he was bored, decided to become a member of Al Capone's squad. Anita Dunn was the communications director for this president. What did Anita Dunn? What was it that she did? We have cut four there. If you've got it, here, just to refresh your memory. Think about this. This was Anita Dunn talking to children affectionately about Mao Zedong.
In 1947, when Mao Zedong was being challenged within his own party on his plan to basically take China over, Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalist Chinese held the cities. They had the army. They had the air force. They had everything on their side. And people said, how can you win? How can you do this? How can you do this against all of the odds against you? And Mao Zedong said, you know, you fight your war and I'll fight mine. And think about that for a second. Yeah. You don't have to accept the definition of how to do things, and you don't have to follow other people's choices and paths.
That's right, you don't. All right, cut it. You don't have to do that. You don't have to follow the Constitution. In fact, if your definition of the Constitution is a little different, throw it out. You don't have to follow the laws in Congress. You don't have to appoint people who are vetted by the Congress of the United States. You go around them. He appointed someone today, Elizabeth Warren, a very controversial appointment. She didn't go through the vetting process. He created a new position so that a radical could be placed in a strategic position to affect the financial institutions of this country and do one thing that's very, very important to this president. This is a little medley. You're going to hear three voices here, four voices, actually. You're going to hear the president. And then you're going to hear John Holdren, who's in the news today. If you go up to Michael Savage's website, drmichaelsavage.com, michaelsavage.com, you'll see something about John Holdren, a close advisor to the president, who is always out there fooling around with the language again. Playing around with language. You know, global warming, man-made global warming, sustainable development, those things, they didn't work. So we're going to have we'll get to that in a little bit. But here is the really important part. Everything that this man does, whether it's the oil crisis down in the Gulf, or whether it's every appointee, it's connected to this. the cut I want you to play is cut 10, if it's
but
there.
But the Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth. Political and community organizing and activities on the ground that are able to put together the actual coalitions of power through which you bring about redistributive change.
I think ultimately the rate of growth of material consumption is going to have to come down, and there's going to have to be a degree of redistribution of how much we consume in terms of energy and material resources in order to leave room for people who are poor to become more prosperous.
If we want to redistribute resources, if distributive justice is our guide...
No, we're going to change the whole system.
Redistributive justice. Climate change justice. That's Cass Sunstein again. Climate change justice. Redistribution of income. We must, because Americans have used air conditioners and automobiles and light bulbs. Yes, did you know you were guilty of a crime? Did you know that? And Cass Sunstein is very, very close. A regulatory czar. Very close to the President of the United States from Chicago. He thinks it's all 2 or 3% of the gross national product, sending it around the world, taking it away from you. That's perfectly fine. We can deal with it. Based on a hoax. That your breath, CO2 escaping your body, is causing the climate to change. That's right. And oh, let me tell you. Let me tell you. It's complicated. It's very, very complicated when everything ends up with the answer to everything is redistribution of wealth. We take money from you and we give it to this person. We level the playing field. That's what Elizabeth Warren said today. That's what she's about, leveling the playing field for everybody, all under the guise of being fair. There is nothing fair about stealing or redistribution of wealth. It's a friendly term created by Marxist communists for the destruction of freedom. There is nothing fair about destroying freedom. Nothing. Oh, it can be done. John Holdren was over in Oslo today. Do you know what he was doing? He was changing the terminology. Changing the terminology in order to achieve economic gains by taking money away from you and giving it to others around the world. What is the new light bulb that went off? Of course, they only have a light bulb till 2014. Soon it'll be a fluorescent bulb. You won't even be able to use the word light bulb going off. And I had the fluorescent bulb went off on my head, and a lot of mercury came out. And I'm burning up now. Get the EPA here. Get them here. I'm burning. Global climate disruption is the new term. Oh, that'll really change everything. It wasn't man-made global warming. We've already made CO2 a pollutant, your breath. Your exhalation, now it's global climate disruption. In order to stop global climate disruption, guess what the answer is? Redistribution of wealth. Steal money from you and give it to somebody else. The very first thing that this president did, folks, do you remember what it was? Do you remember the first tax break he killed? And nobody could figure out why charitable deductions, cutting charitable deductions. There was a little bit of a complaint, but nobody could figure out what the heck is he doing? Why would you do that? Why would you kill charitable deductions, particularly if it's hope and change and you're a charitable man? Why would that happen? It happens because, you see, it isn't going to be up to you, charity. We're doing away with charity. After all, he's not really a Christian. He is a black liberation theologist. It's a collective experience that we're looking for here. And so I, Barack Hussein Obama, declare that charity is no longer as important as the government handout. And that is what we are going to do. And even if the country suffers, apparently, it'll all turn out for the better. Because the world is a collective beast. Europe is socialized. And we need to join it. Because, you know, it doesn't really work unless it's a worldwide global beast. And so things won't look good, and I may only be a one-term president, but I want to be a good one-term president. When we come back, I'll let you hear a little give and take between the senator from Louisiana and a perfectly named individual, Rebecca Blank, to see how our administration dealt with the oil crisis. More proof that this is not an accident. And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. And there is no let-up, folks. The Alinskyites, who is in the White House, is only first in line. His Secretary of State, as you know, is rumored to be thinking of running against him. If, as the President said, he wants to be a really good one-term president rather than a two-term president who doesn't really meet the muster. However, she is also an Alinskyite. It all strikes me, it's an amazing thing that you have these people who find Marxism, the trails of Marxism, the beards of Marxist. So Mr. Cooley in Delaware, bearded Marxist. What is the attraction? Well, we could spend hours and hours and hours on that subject. But I have a little treat for you. There's one reason that this president is not a complete success, that he has turned almost everyone. I mean, the American people are turning so fast, it's unprecedented. And it seems to me that this president didn't really listen to Alinsky hard enough. Play clip three. This is Saul Alinsky.
The organizer who feels that he has the truth, that he has the ideology, the gospel, and he carries within him not a love for people. He carries really a hate, because within him is a certain elitism that, you know, I know what's good for you, and damn you, this is what you're going to have whether you like it or not.
Stop it. There it is, folks. You know, it truly is one of those theorems in life. If you study somebody and you say you're something and you don't follow through, you don't listen to everything. See, Alinsky, to be successful, he knew one thing in the United States of America, that this phony nonsense, this elitism, which is what both Hillary and Barack Obama epitomize, it ain't going to work, because the United States is not Europe. The United States is a country of a middle class, the country of the middle. It is the middle class country in the world, which is why we are hated everywhere. Because here in this country, you can come from a farm. You can come from a tenement house. You can come from a poor family. And you can become president of the United States. You can't do that everywhere. You cannot, even if they tell you that you can. So he didn't really listen to – he needs to be paddled by Saul. But Hillary's waiting in the wings, and I'm sure she's listened. She's had time to sit back and watch. So we are in for it, folks. She is ready. If he doesn't run, and I hope he does run, because I want him to fail on his record. Because there's more to come out about this guy, ladies and gentlemen. It is not that he is a socialist. And no matter how many Republicans tell you, oh, don't say that, don't say that. Oh, you won't be given any credit. You'll lose your credibility. If you call him what he is, if you call Mike Castle what he is, you'll lose your credibility. If you call Scazzafazza what she was, you will lose your credibility. If you call Barack Obama what he is, you will lose your credibility with who? With Chris Matthews? Brian Williams? Who exactly?
Perhaps Dan Rather, somebody like that. You know, if you call him a socialist, I may not review your tight pants. It's very, very tight. I've got a job. I've got something that you don't have. The name Rather. Let me tell you, I'm somebody important. I'm in the American media.
Folks, the next 2 years are yours. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. I am a professional actor. I have been for over 40 years, best known as Howling Mad Murdoch on television's The A-Team, and Reginald Barclay on Star Trek Next Generation and Voyager in the film First Contact. I've also worked on stage and in motion pictures. I've worked with Charlton Heston, Robert Wagner, Maggie Smith, George Peppard, Debbie Reynolds, Glenn Close, a lot of famous people have been around Hollywood since the late 70s. Very difficult place to be for a conservative actor, and I have been a conservative all of my life. Very, very hard. In fact, some of the most difficult things during the period after 9/11, some of the most difficult things, and my life changed after 9/11, as conservative as I was, I became more involved in this nation and was astonished, totally and completely astonished, to find out that not everybody felt as I did. Many, many people out here in Hollywood thought it was deserved. We deserved it. In fact, I don't know whether you remember, one of the great liberals of our time, William Jefferson Clinton, went to Georgetown University and basically said, "Hey, you know what? We've done a lot of things we deserved. The writing was on the wall. You know, we got our comeuppance." I became furious. I just couldn't bear it. I couldn't bear it. And a lot of people came out. Oh, he didn't really say that. He did say it. And now you have another Democratic president who runs around the world apologizing for everything we've done. Everything. Apologizing for who we are. His wife said she's not proud of the country. You've been attacked. You find people who are not connected to what happened in New York City. I was out here in Los Angeles. I was very connected to what happened in New York City because that could have been me. It could have been my children. It could have been my family. close. I knew people in New York. And I want to say something that is not talked about. They didn't set out to kill 3,000 people, even though it was the largest number of people killed on American soil. They set out to kill 50. They set out to kill 50,000 people. But because they are who they are, because we have some semblance of preparation in our world, because we had the first attack on the World Trade Center, through the grace of God, we only lost. Only. It's very even difficult to talk about. 3,000 people between the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. But they wanted to kill 50. And so why are we split in this country? When the president of the United States, then George Bush, picked up that bullhorn and said, the people who are responsible for this will soon hear from all of us. He was inclusive. He was inclusive, which is exactly the opposite of the president of the United States now. He sets brother against brother. He attacks the state of Arizona. He attacks the state. They want to protect their border, which is the job of the federal government. And what does he do? We're going to prosecute him. What is the first thing that he does? He starts talking about how it may be possible. Hey, you know, it might happen that the president of the United States, the vice president of the United States, some people in the military will all be brought up on charges. Might happen. They may be criminals. Great way to start a presidency. Inclusive. And all those crimes you've committed, don't worry about it, America. I'm going to go around the world and bow like crazy, because I really know how to bend at the waist. I'm bending. It's easy and fun. But I'm not an ideologue. I bend to the right, I bend to the left, but I bend. So we're divided. And what does he do? He appoints somebody by the name of Rosa Brooks to the Defense Department, somebody who suggested that Cheney be brought up on charges. Criminal charges. She's in the Department of Defense. So when you start adding up, I mean, think about that for a moment. That truly is the Latin American way. You make criminals of the former administration. Banana Republic. He's done everything and anything that he can to turn one person against another. Division, division, division. Then isolation, isolation, isolation. He names talk show hosts. Calls them out. He kicks reporters off of planes. If their newspapers and their editorial board didn't support him. He's petty and venal. He calls a police officer stupid for arresting somebody who appeared to be breaking into a house in Connecticut. Said he didn't know anything about it, but the police officer is stupid. Didn't hold another press conference for quite some time after that. And he has decided that the czar route is better than the constitutional route. He has done everything that he possibly can to set us apart from one another. And he has succeeded to a great degree until the actual process of deterioration begins. People began, hey, you know what? This isn't what I voted for. I didn't think he was going to do that. I didn't know he was going to do this. And we have had no help from the media. The media is it will be, mark my words on this, if I won't be around, but those of you who will be living, 50 years from now, one of the great stories, perhaps the greatest story of the last half of the last century, will be that the media, protected by the Constitution of the United States, the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, direct protection, abrogated its responsibility. And instead of remaining egalitarian, through force and effort, by the way, because we're all prejudiced, we all have biases, but it is their job to inform the electorate. Instead, they decided to become influential and not informative. That is why 85 to 90% of them are Democrats. Every poll taken proves it. All the contributions from them prove it. And the way they write and disseminate information, well, that's the biggest proof. The telephone number here is 1-800-449-8255. We are and have every single day new evidence of what this administration plans to do and what it has done. There is a colloquy between Senator Vitter down in Louisiana and Rebecca Blank that I'm going to play for you in a little while that will open your eyes. You will be astonished. You will have a very hard time pulling back and saying, oh, well, this is all just happenstance. I also have some cuts of Judith Miller, who is the quintessential liberal in the media, and why we are in trouble with them, what their point of view is, how it changes, how it is biased. I think you'll be quite stunned by that. Right now we have a caller on the line, Roy, in Portland, Oregon. You are on the Savage Nation.
Hello, yes. I wanted to elaborate on your well-made point about Saul Alinsky and Obama. Saul Alinsky made a comment. I read several of his books, but I can't pin down his comment, that you do not organize a community to get things, to do things it doesn't want to do, because that'll create an elite. You know, Alinsky was very successful at community organizing, work even with social conservatives, Catholics. Obama is a theoretician. He is to community organizing, well, let's say the modern liberal is to the true liberal. He's motivated by his elitism. It derives from his narcissism. It has a component of malignancy that derives from resentment. And his resentment drives him to diminish us. I would even want to say that we are his dhimmi, you know? And this is what's going on.
Now, thank you very much, Roy. It's very cogent, very thoughtful comment, and he is exactly right. Hearing Saul Alinsky, since his name is brought up so frequently, that's why when I have this opportunity at this microphone, this very, very precious microphone, I want you to hear the man himself. Alinsky was, and I suppose, this is a forced revolution. For this very short period of time, it is a one-handed. The Democrats had their 2 years, and they're making the most of it. We're going to undo it. We are going to undo it. And you will be here with me when it happens. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage. I'm going to be continuously astonished by that assault and that so much of it goes on under your nose. Robert Allen Benelli at the bottom of the hour. I want you to hear right now, and this will be cut two. This is Representative Vitter in New Orleans, talking to Rebecca Blank about what the Department of Interior did during the oil crisis when it decided on its six-month moratorium, capping wells, shutting down all of the work, the oil work, in the Gulf. Listen to this conversation between Vitter and Ms. Blank.
Ms. Blank, can you thoroughly discuss the economic analysis done at Commerce and Interior and other federal agencies prior to the moratorium being issued? I know this is a new analysis. What was done? Can you describe it in detail prior to the decision?
To my knowledge, though I was not directly involved with that, there was no economic analysis done prior to the issuance of the moratorium. The initial focus was on the environmental preservation and the safety of the drilling industry.
So you're saying prior to this major decision to shut down activity in the Gulf, there was no economic analysis done?
The focus prior to putting on the moratorium was on the range of safety and environmental issues, which the explosion immediately raised.
Okay.
Cut it right there. There was no economic analysis done. It was just environmental danger, right? The only problem with this is that there was a report issued by engineers who said, do not cap the wells because it will be more dangerous if you cap the wells. This was their position. The administration, however, decided that didn't fit into the plan. We're going to cap the wells. And so they tacked on a political notice, a paragraph that these engineers had not seen, but kept the names of the engineers on the report. This is criminal, really. It's fraud. It made it look as if these engineers supported the decision of the moratorium. This was from Fox News, and it was William Lajeunesse. But this is cut one.
None of us actually reviewed the memorandum as it's written in the report. What was in the report at the time it was reviewed was quite a bit different in impact than what's there now. So we wanted to distance ourselves from that recommendation.
Now, those experts in their letter say the president misrepresented their opinions because they say shutting down those wells actually make them less safe because, of course, that's when the accident occurred and that continuing operations are actually safer.
Now, that was Ken Arnold, one of the engineers, and I want you to put these two together. No economic analysis. We were only concerned about safety. We were so concerned about safety that we fraudulently issued a report using the names of these engineers to support our political desire to cap the wells and to destroy the economic industry of the oil industry and energy industry down in the Gulf. There is no explanation other than we want this. We don't want exploration. We don't want energy survival in the United States because, as the science advisor, John Holdren, said, and you heard it earlier on this program, we have to redistribute income. We have to lower our standard of living. We have to stop our consumption and redistribute money and income to the rest of the world so that their level of income, their level of the use of resources can rise, because the United States is the problem. But you see, and I know you know this, ladies and gentlemen who listen to the Savage Nation, they could never have gotten elected if they had told you the truth. After the bottom of the hour, Robert Allen Bonelli on the Savage Nation. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage.
Savage.
And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. And we have been discussing here, right in front of our eyes, our country apparently being revamped, changed, molded, poured down the drain. You can use any number of titles, but people are starting to recognize that something is going on. But not all of us, myself included, have the expertise to understand the intricacies of what's happening in the financial sector. Right now, we have a 30-year Wall Street veteran, Robert Allen Bonelli, whose new book, Liberty Rising, is on its way. Mr. Bonelli is going to explain to you and to me what these intricacies are and what we are really facing and what may be our last hope. Mr. Bonelli, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Nice to be here, Dwight. Thank you so much for having me on.
We were talking during the break, and I was wondering if you had any thoughts about Elizabeth Warren, who was appointed today, and what the appointment was, and what does it mean?
Well, Elizabeth Warren is a Harvard Law School professor. She's a lawyer. Her whole career has been in contract law, bankruptcy, commercial law. She's never run a business. She doesn't really understand credit, but she came onto the scene a few years ago and was actually early on in the Obama administration was taking a look at the Troubled Asset Relief Program, and it was her idea to create this Consumer Finance Protection Agency, which was recently formed. Now, because of her background, she has redistributive concepts in her mind. She has been a staunch critic of the banking industry, almost to the point of being a zealot. And once again, off in the background of academia, not with any real experience. So to have her actually become the head of this new agency would be extremely controversial, and she probably would not get past the Senate. But here again, what we've been seeing in the last 18 months with this administration, it really doesn't matter what the Constitution provides, and oh, by the way, today is Constitution Day.
Yes, it is.
Wonderful day to talk about the Constitution.
Oh, geez.
And of course, our wonderful president celebrates it by giving her the position to come up with the structural concepts for the Consumer Protection Agency. She's not going to run it. She's merely going to design it. And in that capacity, she's acting as an advisor, or as a czar, if you will. And once again, what our president is doing, with all due respect to Mr. Obama, he's walking right around the Constitution and avoiding the advice and consent of the Senate to get her influence on this new agency.
This has been, I mean, this is, of course, typical of him now. We sit back and we watch one czar being appointed after the other. We've seen, and of course, we're now talking about trillions of dollars. So, and today in Los Angeles, everything was $111 million, and there were 55 jobs. The controller was there saying, well, you know, as if it was nothing. This, what has been in your mind? What is, we use Saul Alinsky, you've heard me use Alinsky, but I think that there's more than just Alinsky, an Alinsky process here. What is this? What do you think this guy is really doing? What is he trying to do?
What he's doing is he's looking for a way to consolidate control. And there are a number of ways you can do that. But the best way to do it in a society that has, in 234 years, become the greatest nation in the world, because our free market society, our capitalist society, has set our innovation in motion and allowed us to create great things and become a great nation. So the best way to attack that and to get the ultimate control is to absolutely destroy the financial structure of the country. And I like to use as an example, everyone talks about us being such a rich nation. And a lot of people have heard me say this in the past, but I think it's worth pointing out. Dwight, if I take all of the wealth of the nation, all of the assets of every small business, of every major corporation, I take your assets, my assets, and our family's assets, they add up to $73 trillion. If we take our nation's debt and all of our unfunded liabilities, it adds up to $109 trillion. That means we have a negative net worth, or we're bankrupt, to the tune of $36 trillion. That's a wonderful jumping-off point for a president who believes in redistributive policies to allow him to come in and say, look, if we crash the economic system in this country. We can then rebuild it. We could reshape it. We can control the means of production. And then we will be able to decide who the winners and losers are and redistribute everything just to give people sustenance. You know, you referred to Animal Farm earlier in your broadcast, and you talked about human beings being the highest element of society, and we just make sure that the animals who are all producing, we take what they produce and give them just their sustenance. Well, that's exactly where we have found ourselves today. And this is something that has occurred over the past 100 years. We slowly bled ourselves of our liberty in exchange for the government providing us with these so-called safety nets. But this administration has gone absolutely wild. And you know what? In some ways, I'm going to thank Mr. Obama for doing that, because it has shined a bright light on what exactly has been going on in this country and just how fundamentally flawed we are today and how dangerous we are right at the precipice of the collapse of our entire economic system.
You know, this is so I'm going to ask you the question because I don't have I feel that the people in this country are beginning to see that they were hoodwinked. I'm beginning to see that that's happening. But I am looking at a network, a spider web of regulations and intricacies that are just mind-boggling. Every single day, I read of a new rule, a new connection to something that I didn't know existed. The idea that the IRS is being made into some kind of superstructure that is going to look at us as, I don't think people understand how big an organization the IRS is going to have to be to implement the health care bill, for instance. But that the health care bill is connected to everything else. How are we going to – what is the best process? What is the road back? How do we – you know, how do we carve the turkey? In other words, what do we do to get our country back?
Good question. Let me give you an example first of what's taking place in this country financially, and then I'll give you another example of what the citizens of the country at large are doing, and I'll finish with an answer, direct answer to your question. Number one, all of this regulatory stuff that we're seeing come in, that's putting more and more roadblocks to do business. The threatened rises in taxes, the increased costs of operation of any business as a result of the health care bill, Obamacare, which had nothing to do with health care, had everything to do with control, has resulted in a very unique financial situation in our country today, Dwight, and that is plain and simple, capital is on strike in America. Corporations are sitting on $2 trillion in cash, more than ever before in history. Small businesses are not hiring. The Obama administration says you hire someone, you pay them $40,000 a year, you pay them $20,000 on top of that in benefits, and we'll give you a one-time $3,000 check. Small businesses are not falling for that. So the first thing that we're seeing is that capital has gone on strike in this country, and that's why we're not seeing the creation of jobs. The second thing that's going on, people talk about, you know, we need a third party because we got the established Republican Party is not doing what it's supposed to be doing, and of course the Democrats are doing what they're doing. We need a third party. Well, you know what? We've had a third party in our nation for a lot of years. That third party is called the people, and the people are fighting back. We saw that in Delaware. We saw that in New York, and I think there are going to be some really interesting surprises coming in November. So the people are fighting back. Now, what do we have to do? We have to stay passionate, we have to stay involved, and we have to remember that the state only has the power that we give to it. So on 11-2, on November 2nd, this nation has got to rise up and turn these ideologues out of office. And we can't do it just by winning. I hate to say it, but we have to thoroughly vanquish them. All American citizens who care about liberty need to turn out in great numbers on November 2nd and vote for liberty. Vote for those people that are going to do what we want them to do. Support the will of the people. That's what has to be done, and we can do it. We have the power. You know, Thomas Jefferson said it so well. He said, when the government fears the people, there's liberty. Well, what we saw in the primaries across the country this past Tuesday, and what we saw in reaction to that, Dwight, we're seeing the government fear the people. And that gives me great hope, because this is really where the power resides. It resides with you, it resides with me, with our friends, with our family, and we need to do this because our nation is at the brink, and this is possibly the most important election in American history.
Well, you have you're giving me goosebumps, actually, because I want to hear this from our elected representatives. I want to hear this from those people that are now in seats of power in the government. But I'm not hearing it. I mean, I'm hearing from a few, but I'm not hearing it the way you have expressed it. Now, when we take back some of these seats, when we take back power, is it – now, I don't see any reason – I keep hearing, oh, you can't undo health care. You can't undo this. I don't see – in my, and I want you to just tell me what you think about this. If something can be written, it seems to me it can be unwritten. Is that a ridiculous position to take?
In fact, I'll answer your question and give you an interesting example of what this administration is trying to do in very much the same way. The health care bill, first of all, has to be funded. It's not funded, and the funding powers come from the Congress. It doesn't matter, with all due respect, Mr. Obama will be in office for another 2 years, even with a Republican majority in Congress. If the Republican majority defunds the bill, he has nothing to veto. He could veto a repeal, but the executive branch can only spend what has been appropriated by Congress. So we could begin to turn this legislation around by simply defunding it. The other thing that we can do, if we have to, because there are some terrible things written into this law that require two-thirds majorities to overturn, but we can pass a new law that nullifies this law. And what Mr. Obama and his administration are doing right now, one of the lies that they're just pushing on the American people is this new Small Business Act. And they keep talking about, oh, this is so necessary for small business, it's going to help small business. Section 13.4 of the new Small Business Act repeals the existing small business law. Why is this important? The existing small business law, which has been around for decades, provides that 43% of all government spending must be spent with small businesses. If that's repealed, it'll allow the government to take 100% of its spending and direct them towards union-based large corporations. So they're actually trying a tactic that we could use to stop Obamacare. They're trying to repeal a long-standing law to get something in that will favor the people that are supporting them. So anything that can be set up in a representative republic, which is what we are a representative republic.
That's right.
There are several ways we could turn this around.
They're trying to change that, too. I don't know whether you saw what they did up in Boston. They're trying to get around the Electoral College. It's as if we're being attacked from every front possible by munchkins. You know, you just have so many munchkins out there eating at your heels. You know, it's astonishing that it's every area. Can you stay with us to the top of the hour?
Absolutely.
Okay. This is Dwight Schultz. We are speaking with Robert Allen Benelli, and I am sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation, and we have Robert Allen Benelli, author of the new book, Liberty Rising, McKenna Publishing, soon to be in your room, in your house, I hope. Mr. Benelli has been giving me goosebumps, because when I listen to him, I have hope. I get a feeling that there is something that can be done. Mr. Benelli, welcome again.
Hi, Dwight. Good to be back.
If I were to call my congressman or call my senator, or if you were to do it, what should I say? What should be the priority, the number one thing that we say when we want to get this ball rolling?
I think the first thing you have to say to him is, remember that oath you took to support and defend the Constitution? That wasn't just something to check the box to get the keys to your office. That is sacred, and you need to follow it. That's number one. Number two, in doing so, you are there to do the will of the people. And this is our will. This is what we want done. This is our country. We don't want to see a nation that, as a leader, that does nothing more than promote class warfare and divide us. We don't want to see a nation where we are told that we don't know how to be charitable, but the government knows how to be charitable. We want to tell our elected representatives very simply one message they must understand clearly, and that is that we are America. We are exceptional, and there truly is a concept of American exceptionalism. And the way to get back to that is to get back to self-reliance, honor, truth. These are the things that the American people want more than anything else, and it comes from only one place. It comes from leadership, and that's where we must go to our congressmen, go to our senators, and say, stop dividing and start leading.
You know, thank you. I have faith. I do have faith that we will find that leader, but I don't believe it will be easy. I'm going to ask you a question now that you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but I'm sure you've thought about this long and hard. Because we all have, but if you can give it a go, how did this happen? How did this man become president of the United States?
He became president of the United States because we weren't looking. We dealt with a situation in the turn of the 20th century where we were going from an agricultural society to an industrialization to industrialized society, and Woodrow Wilson promoted policies that we felt we needed to do to protect workers in factories. That was good on the surface, but it gave up some liberty for control. We saw it again during a crisis in 1929 and in the 1930s with Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And then perhaps the most destructive president in our country was Lyndon Johnson with his Great Society and the implementation of Medicare and Medicaid and HUD. We weren't looking. We were asleep at the switch. Once again, we got caught in another crisis, and we allowed some of our liberty to slip away. And we've reached a point where 47% of the electorate derives benefits that they're not paying for. So they have no incentive but to continue to vote for those benefits to continue. The good news is most Americans, even a good portion of those, recognize they want to hand something better to their children. We are no longer asleep at the switch. And as the Tea Party movement has coined the phrase, we are silent no more. And that's why I think we all have reason to be hopeful. The numbers that we saw turn out last Tuesday, the turnouts in those primaries were well beyond expectation, forgetting
Huge.
About the actual
yeah.
results.
Well, Mr. Bonelli, do you have a web page or any way that people can get in touch with you? Are you interested in that? Do you have a web page?
Yes.
You want to give it out?
Yes. It's www.robertallenbonelli.com, spelled RobertAllenBonelli.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an ally. Mr. Bonelli, his new book, Liberty Rising, soon will be in your home. It is, you can never have enough information. You've just heard someone who says it can be done. It can be done. It can be. This is not Barack Obama talking. This is part of the American people. You and I together. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll be right back. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on The Savage Nation, one of the most coveted microphones in the world. I don't understand why I am here. I truly do not. I am fortunate. I recognize my great fortune. You wonder who the hell I am. I am a professional actor. I have been for over 40 years. A conservative, all of them. Best known as Howling Mad Murdoch on television's The A-Team, and Reginald Barclay, the perennial lieutenant on Next Generation, and Voyager, crossed over. 13 years until he was promoted, finally, in the end of Voyager, the final two episodes. I was happy to see him promoted. But I was very happy that he didn't have to talk politics for those 13 years. Because it's hell in California.
Or didn't it yet? Even when you get a governor who says, you know, I'm conservative.
He turned out to be the biggest girly man.
Global warming, I'm for it. Because it's going to bring money into my pockets. My breasts are swollen. I need more pockets.
That's what he turned out to be, folks. You know, he said he was a Republican and a conservative, and he turned. Of course, he was married to a Kennedy. So you had your suspicions. But a lot of people in real life, you see, are not who they say they are.
I'm a real conservative, which is why I'm for the taxing. I'm a real conservative, which is why I'm going to go for the global warming and for this and throw out 60,000 people in all the industries that I can. I'm a conservative.
No, you're not. You never were. It got you into the governorship, and now you're going out. But he wasn't who he said he was. He wasn't. Mike Castle in Delaware was not who he said he was. Republicans were right to get rid of Mike Castle. And we know it because what did he do? What did he do when he lost? He's not going to concede. He's not going to congratulate the Republican. He's going to support the Democrat. He better not. But he's going to. But he thinks he can. We were lucky to have Mr. Robert Allen Bonelli here, who gave me a little fire in the belly, a little hope that there's a people by a nerdy Marx. I don't care. And, you know, it just is so disgusting. When Scuzzy Fazasava, or Didi Fazasava, whatever her name was up there, when she turned, right after she lost and supported the Democrat, you knew she was going to do it. She split the vote, then she went, oh, I'm going to support the Democrat, because guess who? I was a Democrat all the time. Hold on. I'm going to use my real voice now. Folks, let me tell you. There is one thing that you, and I know I have learned this over the years. When somebody is telling me that I'm not smart enough to figure out what's going on, that what I see is not real, I no longer say, you know what, I'm going to step back and give this person the benefit of the doubt. I say, prove it. Show me. You show me. And I want to say, this, I have to get this off my chest. I voted for George Bush twice, which means I voted for the policies created by Karl Rove twice. Twice. I didn't agree already compassionate. It seemed to me that taking away the charitable deduction was not compassionate. It's not compassionate when you're forced to do something. You know, when you give $10,000 and you're drawing $1 million every other week, I don't find that charitable. I don't. But when we were fighting the fight after 9/11, when conservatives in California, actors in a very hostile environment, were supporting George Bush, his policies, and Karl Rove and his policies, they saw fit not to fight back. It was enough for them to have us out there hanging out on a limb. Now, recently, Karl Rove apologized for it, said, hey, we should have fought. It wasn't enough, and it seems to me that if you really are apologizing to the people, you wouldn't have said what you said about Miss O'Donnell in Delaware, even if you thought it. You wouldn't have attacked her with nonsensical, nebulous, personal attacks. Give me something fundamental, like she's not really a conservative like Castle. And don't use the word beloved for a Democrat like Teddy Kennedy. And George Bush, let me say this to you. I know you don't want to say anything about this president out of respect for the office. Bull. Nonsense. It doesn't wash. Respect for the office is respect for the people. Do you see what is happening from Crawford? Do you see what is happening to this country? Do you see what is happening to free enterprise, to capitalism? Do you see what is happening to the military? Do you see what is being denuded? Do you see the redistribution of wealth? It is anti-constitutional. It is your duty to speak out of respect for the office, because the president is not respecting it. You let us hang out to dry. And a lot of us suffered more than you did, because you had two terms. It's about time you came out of hiding. I know you've got a book coming out. Well, it better be a humdinger. This president never respected you. And when he didn't respect you from his inauguration speech on, he wasn't respecting me. And I kept waiting for you to stand up for me the way I stood up for you, but you didn't do it. Now, I give you a lot of credit, and I support you immensely. I supported you during the elections. A lot of people didn't. A lot of conservatives didn't. I did, but not in this regard. And you better come out and make a statement and tell the American people that you see what's going on. It could be the spur. It could be the kick in the pants that truly is counter-revolutionary. And if you don't do it, I'll just sit back and say, well, Karl Rove must have done it out of expediency. He must have just done it to make you and he look better. Didn't really mean it. When he said beloved and used that word with Castle, must have meant it. Anyway, I had to get that off my chest. It's tough, you know? This is not play. The guy in that call last night, if you listen to Michael Savage, yesterday, Peter called him, and he said to Savage, you know, I listen to you for entertainment, but not for facts. And Savage went off on him, as he should have. And yes, there's entertainment in talk radio, but it's deadly serious, what we're talking about. There is no separation when you're talking seriously about it. You can be funny. You can be absurd, because we are living in an absurd time. There's nothing more absurd than a man who's a Marxist who says he's not a Marxist and is a Marxist, and an entire media lays down and bows to him. There's nothing more absurd than the president of the United States bowing to every leader that he can, going around the world, telling everybody that the United States sucks. There's nothing more serious than that. But you can laugh at it because it's laughable. And it is right out of Animal Farm, George Orwell. You have practically every member, high member of his administration is into redistribution of wealth. Who wrote that? Thomas Jefferson? Where did you see the word redistribution of wealth? Paine? Franklin? Adams? Or Marx and Lenin? Read the preamble to the Constitution of the Communist Party of the United States of America. What you have now is more like that than somebody who swore to uphold the Constitution of the United States. I don't see it. We have some real problems. And I don't see it. I see lies. I hear lies. I'm told things are being done. I saw a court order against the capping of the wells. But I don't see them. I don't see them following the court order. No, they're going to fight it. I know we were called racial cowards. And I see the president of the United States turning brother against brother and not coming out and saying, you know what? You shouldn't be attacking as one state, the state of Arizona. You shouldn't be doing that. Let us deal with that. No, I don't see that. I see right on, brother. That's what I see. I see a lot of right on and fist banging. I see a lot of threats. That's what I see from here. And it's funny. Oh, it's funny. Oh, it's deadly funny. It's deadly funny. And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
What the who? Who that? Wait a minute. Hold on. Hold on. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. What? Security force? What is that? Where did that come from? Folks, do you remember at any time since he said that, any journalist anywhere saying, Mr. President, what did you mean? Just as powerful as the military. Who says that, running for president of the United States, and doesn't get questioned? Who? Napoleon. The big pig, Comrade Napoleon. He could say it, because all the little good comrades know that he means well. We don't know what the security force means. We don't know what it will be. But because Napoleon said so, it must be good. After all, he brings us water. He brings us food. He brings us benefits that we wouldn't get with humans. No, he wants to do away with the rule of humans. That's why he's shutting down the energy industry. That's why Barbara Boxer, that old horse, and Nancy Pelosi, that old horse, and Dianne Feinstein are destroying all the farms in Central California because we need to bring back the salamanders and the newts and the squirrels and the little rabbits to take over the fields, get rid of those nasty humans. This is Dwight Schultz. I am an actor, and I have been for 40-some years. But now I feel like an old man having talked like this all over you. And that's exactly what I feel like. I'm experiencing the death throes of an administration that should have been dead 18 months ago. But it's alive. I thought it was a nightmare. But each day the nightmare gets worse. And then I hear someone like Robert Benelli come on, talk to me. I listen to Michael Savage. And I get fire in my belly. And I say, you know what? We can do this. Anything that's done by this guy can be undone. The only people who are telling you that it can't be undone, oh, it can't be undone, are the same people who told you that O'Donnell couldn't win in Delaware, that that beloved Mike Castle deserves that seat. He deserves it because all the members of the press corps think he's beloved. Beloved. And you know who they are. You know how much you can count on the media, right? Right? You know how much you can count on them.
You know that when it comes down to telling you the truth, and telling you a fantasy, well, if the truth is about a Republican, they'll tell you the truth. If the truth is about a conservative, they'll tell you the truth. If the truth is about Barack Obama, well, they'll tell you what's necessary for Napoleon. I hear it, folks. The Democratic Party. This is why we're never allowed in. We can't understand that language, but we know what they are. We know what they are. They vote for other Democrats. That's what they do. When Harry Reid called Mr. Coons his pet, he's an animal. It's Animal Farm, folks. What I'm saying is not absurd. It's a pet. A Harry Reid pet. I could have recorded that, but I didn't. I gave you the real thing because it took a little effort. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Please come back. This is Dwight Schultz. I am sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. A professional actor for over 40 years, a conservative all my life, a radio talk show host aficionado. I admire them. I listen to them. Savage is one of the big ones. I don't know why I'm sitting here behind this microphone. I've said this before. I'm fortunate. I recognize my good fortune, and I hope I'm doing the microphone and Dr. Savage justice tonight. We have been talking about the revolution that is to come and why it is necessary. It's all before us. The elitism, the nonsense, the crap, the garbage, the lies, the Marxism, the media that won't tell you the truth. John Holdren in Oslo today coming up with a new term. A new term for global warming because we didn't drown you with the other term. Anthropomorphic global warming. You are responsible by your breath for the world burning and all of the little animals going to hell. But you and your air conditioners create more global warming, and we've got to stop it and redistribute your money to people all around the world so that their level of income can rise. Why this man, who is so close to the president, so close to him, hasn't been questioned about his questionable activities, I do not know. No, actually, I do know. Well, the media helps him. They're not going to do that. They wouldn't ask a question of this president. Did you hear in the last press conference? Did you watch the reporter from NBC? Chuck Lincoln Todd. I think he's the son of Abraham Lincoln. Chuck Todd gets up and asks the president of the United States, with all of the problems that we have in the world, with the dangers, with Homeland Security, with the mosque, with people around the world wanting to kill Americans. He says, Mr. President, how have you changed Washington? How have you changed it, sir? It's a tough question I asked you, so please forgive me for that hard question. You don't have to deny that that's what he did when this man had an opportunity to ask a penetrating question. Now, George Bush was asked, do you apologize? Are you going to apologize to us for what you're doing? No, oh, Mr. President, how have you changed Washington? Oh, I'm so sorry, it's tough. Well, this is the reason. You knew I was going somewhere, right? This is the head of the AFL-CIO, Richard Trumka. Now, Mr. Trumka was involved in the outrageous
accusations directed towards the Tea Party being racist, that they spit on people. No evidence of it. They just said it. Right? There you go. No evidence. We just say it. And the entire media blasts it. It's in every newspaper. It's in the front page of every newspaper. The McClatchy newspaper. They never, never, ever, ever took it back, even though it was proven, because I think there is proof. There were something like 60 or 70 videos and audios, and nobody could come up with any evidence that the accusations, the heinous accusations, that racist slurs and spitting took place. It didn't happen. But here's Mr. Trumka being asked about it. And, well, this is number 8.
Let me tell you what I witnessed personally when I went up to the Hill on the day of health care vote. The Tea Party people were there. I watched them spit at people. I watched them call John Lewis the N-word.
So you heard that?
Yeah, we did. We did. We did indeed.
So there is Mr. Trumka saying it. Now, this happened to be, there happened to be a panel on Fox News. And this question was brought up to a very, very esteemed journalist in the liberal world, Judith Miller. Judith likes to laugh a lot. And she seems to know something about the Muslim world, at least she pretends to. She wrote for the New York Times. And after all, that's about as high as you can go in the liberal world. The only thing that would send you any higher in that, Judith Miller being asked by Mr. Trumka. Now, he says he saw it. There are tapes and audio recorders everywhere. There is no evidence of it. And John Lewis himself refused to say explicitly that it occurred. But here is the mainstream media's own Judith Miller and her justification for it. Number 9, please.
You know, somebody can be positioned in a way that a camera's not. And if somebody says, I heard it myself, unless you can prove they didn't, why not believe them?
There you go. Why not believe him? Is that my munchkin? I'm smiling. Can you see me smile when I say it? I don't really mean it. If someone sees it and says they see it, I don't know why you shouldn't believe them.
Well. I want you to listen to this, because this individual is being asked a question on Andrew Breitbart's website, and it's Mr. Baker. This individual, Dr. John Drew. This is the gentleman who is being asked a question about the President of the United States. Now, Mr. Drew is now a physician, an orthopedist, very successful. What he is going to say has not been repudiated by the administration. No one has dealt with it in the mainstream media. It has not, as far as I know, escaped the blogosphere. The Andrew Breitbart News Service. But I apply Judith Miller's evidentiary necessities to it. This man actually met the President of the United States many years ago and had a very, very definite opinion about who he was. You know, I tell me who you walk with, I'll tell you who you are. Now, here is Dr. John Drew answering a question. And have you heard this? Number 13, please.
And was your sense that as he was talking about Marxist ideas, was he explaining them as though they were ideas that he was grappling with, understood, or ones that were, as an evangelist for those ideas, one that had incorporated them, believed in them, and was articulating this as a point of direction?
So when I met him, he wasn't... He wasn't just sort of an idle explorer of intellectual Marxism. He was I know this is kind of incendiary,
right.
But he was basically a Marxist-Leninist. He believed that there was a revolutionary class that was going to turn around our whole nation, you know, redistribute wealth, change control over private property,
right.
And I think what he says in Dreams of My Father is that he liked to hang out with the Marxist professors, but where he's, I believe, deceiving the public is he's not explaining that he was 100% in total agreement with those Marxist professors.
Would you play number 9 one more time?
You know, somebody can be positioned in a way that a camera's not, and if somebody says, I heard it myself, unless you can prove they didn't, why not believe them?
Unless you can prove they didn't, if someone says they heard it, why not believe them? Judith! Oh, she wouldn't have heard this. No one else. No one goes up to Breitbart. No one hears anything on the internet. This man, the fact that a few noted journalists wrote about this, the fact that it didn't get onto NBC, ABC, CBS, it doesn't mean anything, does it? Do you think for one moment if John McCain had a good relationship with somebody in the KKK that everybody... Look what they did to Sarah Palin. Look what they're doing to O'Donnell.
She has strong... Why? I mean... Does she know what she's talking about? Who is she to talk about religion and morals? We're Democrats. We don't have those things. Where did they go? Where did you put my religion? I don't have it anymore. I used to, but I threw it away. And you have no right to bring it up in front of me because it hurts. It hurts. And if you hurt me, you're bad.
Folks... I have done a lot of research on Dr. John Drew. It seems to me that Judith Miller ought to be out there in order to present you with the other side. She should have been out there, but you know she didn't. And when Daniel Ortega said that the election of this president would mean that the groundwork for real revolution will be laid in the United States, no one else picked it up either. The news story, it appeared in Investor's Business Daily as a little clip. It appeared in a few news bylines. But nobody bothered to go down there to find out what the hell he meant, how he knew about it. Of course, now you can put black liberation theology together with it. We're still being told that he sat in a church for 20 years. I heard a talk show host, a conservative talk show host the other day, overlook the fact that he sat in a church for 20 years with a man he called his mentor. And he just didn't show up in church. That's all. The fact that this guy's a racist and a bigot and a communist, he didn't know that. He didn't know anything about it. Black liberation theology, nah. 20 years of it, nah. He got married by him. He had his children baptized. He called him a mentor, but you know what? He didn't really show up at church for 20 years. Where's my wife? It's 15 years. Is she still in church? Which pew? I haven't been there in 2015. When? Oh, folks. This is the most despicable situation that we find ourselves in. And as you go back, you look, I swear to you, I had hopes that this was not the case, these things that I'm saying. But the evidence, and it is real evidence, and you can hear it, you can hear no one wants to deal, denial, which is one of the five stages of death. Denial is one of the five stages of death. It happens all the time. And it is not a function necessarily of reality, because it doesn't negate death. There are people who do not go to a doctor I heard Christopher Hitchens say he had lumps on his neck that you could see, but he didn't go to a doctor. Of course, you can't do it with healthcare the way healthcare prices are going to skyrocket. And of course, you won't be able to get treatment. This is Obamacare. That lump, it doesn't look like a lump. That may be a muscle on the side of your neck. Have you been doing a lot of neck lifts? Folks, you know, I got my insurance rates. They've all gone up, as everybody's gone up. One of the reasons they give for it, of course, is now, and you know, it changes my life. I watch football now, right? And I look at all those 26-year-old children playing football.
Look at all those children making $30 million. Those children better give back, don't you think?
Children to 26. How did the language become so distorted that we will, you know what? I'm going to give everyone in the country a Buick because I own it. And we accepted it. I am now going to call... Oh, this is right out of a Woody Allen movie. I am now going to call Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Thursday, and you all... I'm only saying it once. And if you don't get it right, you're going to prison. And I call prison Mexico. Mexico. Anybody who's illegal can stay, but if you don't know which days I've changed, we are exporting you across the border, and they'll let them deal with you. It is an absurdity, beyond an absurdity. We're living in it, and it's real. And this is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation, and we have the new motto for the Democratic Party. Here it is. You heard it here first.
No cost. Absolutely no cost to me.
There you go. No cost to me. Say it. Keep saying it, folks. No cost to me.
No cost. Absolutely no cost to me.
All right. That's enough. It's okay. You got it, folks. They sold you. They sold so many people. They made us all feel that hope and change was just around the corner, only they didn't tell you where it was postmarked from. Anyway, we have a caller, Sue in San Diego. You are on the Savage Nation, Sue.
Hello. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to call to say thank you so much for having Mr. Benelli on your show today. This is the first time in a long time, well, 18 months, 20 months, whatever it's been, that I've really felt a little bit of positive feelings.
Well, thank you, Sue. Thank you very much. And it is our pleasure. And I am grateful, too, that Mr. Benelli was on the program. A little tenuous if I'm not amazingly familiar with somebody. But I felt very uplifted. I felt the same way. And I appreciate your comments, Sue. Thank you very much for being on the Savage Nation. We have, ladies and gentlemen, it is a time, you know, we all have there's the downside to all of this, which is we begin to ask those questions that I asked of Mr. Benelli. How did this happen? And we start to see processes, and we recognize the processes. I'm 62, and went through school in the 60s, and I recognized in history the effect of a real conspiracy, which was the communist conspiracy, worldwide communist conspiracy. No question about it. Absolutely there. And I saw the attempts to mollify it, to deny it. Back then, it was called McCarthyism. McCarthyism came out. Everybody was a McCarthyite. We still hear it today. Sarah Palin was called a McCarthyist by Mr. Cohen in the Washington Post. Right after, it was just an astonishing. I mean, I couldn't believe it. But McCarthyism is used all the time. Today, now, we have the same sort of situation with the Islamic fascist threat. Only their term is Islamophobia. And they took it from the communists and from the homosexual groups. Is homophobia, and then they throw it's Islamophobia. Islamophobia. Yes, but you killed 2,000 people. Islamophobia. Listen to me. 1 minute. It's an act. We wear customs. You see that? Black customs, everybody. Customs, customs, customs. That's where we are in Iran. Iran. You see, This Imam Abdul Rauf. Oh, if we don't build the mosque, you may die. Better build it, or there'll be explosion. You know, that's not the talk of somebody who's immensely insensitive. I mean, who is immensely sensitive, but rather insensitive. Yet he said he's very sensitive, but we're going ahead with the mask. Ah, that chair is on my foot. Oh, does it hurt? It's on my foot. It's crushing this blood. Oh, my, that's terrible. I guess I could move it later, but right now, you know, I'm eating dinner. Ah! I am very sensitive to your pain. Ah! My dog. Pet my dog. Pets are very good for pain. Don't deny your own observations. And listen to Dr. Michael Savage and to guests like Mr. Benelli. Get involved. This is your vote for O'Donnell. Tell the animal farm to get out of town. This is Dwight Schultz sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Tell me who you walk with, and I will tell you.